Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jarovich. Columbus is one of the fastest growing metropolitan areas in the Midwest. This growth is bringing development challenges to the area, especially the surrounding suburbs. From housing to commercial development, developers are putting forth plans for new homes and businesses. But not all plans are being approved, and some are even getting tied up in litigation. John Bush is a staff reporter for Columbus Business First and has been reporting on what has become more common occurrence, the litigation part. He joins us now. Welcome to All Sides, John.
Thanks for having me.
So what is the main reason that these developers are having to file lawsuits in the suburbs? These are against both cities and townships. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's typically when they're trying to do a project, usually a property that they own that they're trying to develop, obviously want to make money, turn into, you know, income-generating development. And as they're going through the process, you know, zoning, you know, permitting and whatnot, if they get denied and repeatedly get denied, they might have a case for, you know, a lawsuit that says that, you know, these are my private property rights that you're denying. And that's usually when it gets into court.
So they're buying, in some cases, I mean, they're buying this property, mm-hmm. and then they're just hoping the city will rezone it. Is that the idea?
Yeah, well, ideally, you would have, you know going in that you're going to get approved for, you know, if it's a rezoning. But that's not always the case. So sometimes, you know, a developer or a property owner could own a property for a long time and try to redevelop it at some point, and, you know, it just gets denied.
Yeah. And are they trying? I mean, most of what you hear about now is mixed use space. Mm-hmm. Is that what a lot of this is, that they want apartments on top and mm-hmm. retail on the bottom?
Yeah, that is a big trend nowadays. Yeah. And mixed use is, I would say, the majority of projects I write about are usually mixed use.
And so why do some of these cities, I don't know if you want to give us an example of a reason that a city or township is saying they don't want that type of development.
Mm-hmm. A lot of times, like multifamily developments have trouble getting approved because, you know, not every community wants more housing, whether it's single family or multifamily. So you can sometimes have an outcry from residents that, you know, this project doesn't fit with the surrounding land use. If it's like a multifamily development in like a typical single family community, you see that a lot. And then just like some cities, you know, have certain ideas of what they want for, you know, pieces of property or areas. And if they feel that a certain project doesn't, you know, jive with what they want to see for that area, they will, you know, go through their process and say, like, this doesn't, you know, adhere to our comprehensive plan or our future land use plan and things like that. And that's also, you know, a scenario where you see that as well.
Now, in your article that you wrote for Columbus Business First, you featured certain developments certain developers that are having issues and filing lawsuits. Can you give us an example of one?
Yeah. So Noor Islamic Cultural Center in Hilliard, that mm-hmm. was one of the a big recent ones. So they bought a former BMW Financial Services building. It's this huge, 220,000-ish square foot former office building that's been vacated for about 3 years or so. And they wanted to redevelop the whole building into, you know, various things like, you know, a worship center, a daycare center, retail services, you know, like a STEM education center, a whole mix of uses. And after they bought the property, they, you know, attempted to go through the process with Hilliard City Council, and they ended up denying their project for various reasons. It really centered around the zoning code. It was zoned office, and I guess they felt there wasn't enough office type uses for it. They wanted, you know, something more tax revenue generating. So they went through the process and were denied. And that's when Noor filed a lawsuit saying that they were within their rights, you know, again, as a property owner, and that their project did adhere to the zoning code. And their argument is that, you know, you can't just say that our project doesn't fit when it actually does. And that's, you know, still ongoing.
Now, you mentioned the property tax thing. So Hilliard is probably, you know, saying no to the zoning change, because if they want to make it a worship center and then there's like a school or daycare situation involved, it might be tax exempt. Is that?
Yeah, that's probably part of it. I'm not sure exactly.
Right.
They haven't said that explicitly. But yeah, I think it really boils down to that, you know, this area is an area they want to reserve for, businesses that are going to be hiring a lot of people, creating jobs, you know, generating, you know, income tax revenue or and things like that. So I think that that's why.
Would they rather the building sit empty, though?
Well, that's the thing. And I think that's what Noor argues is that, look, this has been empty for years now. Mm-hmm. It's currently generating no revenue whatsoever for the city. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to do something that you know, will bring this property back to life and you know, start, you know, generating some tax revenue. But I guess they feel like it's not quite enough for...
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about several developers who are suing Central Ohio cities and townships over denied development permits. And we're talking with John Bush, staff reporter for Columbus Business First. I don't know the exact location of this one in Hillier you're talking about, but some factors in some of these cases is NIMBYism, which is not in my backyard, basically. Mm-hmm. Is it that some cities or townships just don't want certain types of development in that particular area?
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, it depends on the location. But I think, you know, as Central Ohio continues to grow, you know, more people are moving here. You know, there's a lot of opportunity for development. And let's face it, we're facing a housing shortage. So we need more housing of all types. And I think the people that live there aren't used to seeing that, especially, you know, in these outlying areas, maybe more rural areas, places where, you know, there hasn't been a lot of change, you know, over the last, you know, decades or what have you. So when a developer comes in and wants to build like a, you know, big multifamily development or something like that, you know, it can rub people the wrong way. You know, they think like, you know, my community's changing and, you know, people are, you know, don't like change sometimes. So that's when people start to come out and, you know, they'll go to these, you know, township trustee meetings or council meetings and speak out about, you know, certain projects, especially if they live very close to them.
Yeah.
So I think that also ties into the lawsuit thing is that, you know, these elected officials hear, you know, this outcry and it might be from a, you know, a small but loud group, but it's enough for them to listen. And sometimes that will lead them to deny a certain project. Again, you know, residential being the biggest one. I think a guy I quoted in my story said that he'd rather try to zone a nuclear waste facility than a residential subdivision because it brings so many people out that may not want a project like that.
Yeah, you talk to a real estate attorney. That's a funny quote that people would rather have a nuclear waste facility than a residential subdivision. We have a housing crisis, so there is a lack of housing, not just affordable, but all housing. So why do you think some of these places are saying no to the mixed use housing? You had another, I can't remember exactly which example, another example in your article of that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to know exactly why. I think that, you know, some people will point to, I think the main arguments I hear is that, you know, the schools can't handle it. If you have more people moving there, the schools are going to be overrun. They point to, increased traffic. There's also infrastructure issues of, you know, when you build these big developments, you have, you know, water and sewer, roadways, all the infrastructure that goes into it, utilities. So that's a factor. And, you know, just the changing landscape of it, especially if it's like, you know, land that's always been like farmland or something like that. Just, you know, I think people can get a little leery of, you know, seeing their physical landscape change from this nice, quiet, you know, farming community or whatever to seeing all these like huge apartment complexes pop up and things like that. I think it scares people a little bit.
What's another example in your article besides Hilliard and the Noor Islamic Center that you featured?
There was the Stavroff case in Dublin where he filed a lawsuit over the Village Center property that he owned and attempted to redevelop.
What did he want to make that into?
Yeah, he filed several different proposals, and I believe the last one was for residential and also to redevelop like the movie theater out there and some commercial elements. But I believe the last proposal was mostly residential, yeah. And that was something that, you know, wasn't quite what Dublin wanted.
So this is an area off of Sawmill Road where mm-hmm. there's a movie theater, mm-hmm. but, and he owns...
He's owned that for, I don't know, 15 years or so, I think.
Okay, and he wants to do something different with it.
Yeah.
Right? And so, and Dublin's saying no, mm-hmm. basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
Repeatedly.
Repeatedly. Yeah.
And that's, I think, where you get to these lawsuits is if you keep, you know, file initial proposal, you know, get feedback, file another one. I think in the Stavrock case, filed it, you know, three times or so. And then it keeps getting denied. And from the development side, you feel like, well, I'm trying to do everything that, you know, you're telling me I should do and that you want. It fits with the zoning, you know, it fits with whatever sort of comprehensive plan that you have, but I'm still being denied. I think that's where the frustration grows. And that's where you see the lawsuits or the administrative appeals come in.
And do you know if do these lawsuits drag on for a long time? Are some of them settled? Have you followed any that have actually ended?
Yeah, no, they can drag on for a long mm-hmm. time. I think the typical ones that you see that you know are settled are more administrative appeals, where you're just appealing an administrative decision from, you know, a local governing body. There are a few examples of those. I think in my article, I cited a case in Genoa Township, and that actually after that article ran, I learned that they did settle that, and basically the
do you remember what they settled? Yeah,
yeah. The judge just basically said that they were within their rights. So the township it was called a consent decree. So they basically came to an agreement like, we will overturn the decision not to rezone for a residential development. So now they settled. So the rezoning decision was overturned and they can move forward with their residential development out there.
So they said that Genoa Township cannot deny the zoning change. Is that
correct?
Okay. So that in that case, the developer eventually won.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it can't happen.
Yeah. So, well, I'm just saying the developers are already spending a lot of money on buying something. They need an architect and all of that. So adding a lawsuit is just another expense. Based on your research, do a lot of projects just end up, do they just like abandon it because it's too expensive?
Yeah. I think a lot of cases that you don't read about, it's just because they cut bait and they just said, you know, it's not worth it. Like mm-hmm. you said, to pursue the time, the money, the legal fees, everything that goes into it. They just kind of say, all right, we're just going to, you know, cut our losses and move on. But it's difficult if you've owned a property for a long time and it's just sitting there and it's not making money and you're kind of stuck with it. Then that's where you see, you know, them fight it out in court. But in a lot of cases, you know, they could just sell it to someone else or try to do something different. But yeah, it's kind of a last straw to get to the court system because of everything that goes into it.
Is there anything in the next segment, I wanted to say, in the next segment, we're going to talk about the zone in, which is mm-hmm. Columbus basically changed their zoning for certain areas just to make development easier so that these things that we're talking about don't happen as often. Has there been talk in any cities in the suburbs that they're going to have to just change zoning? They're going to have to adapt because this housing is needed or this area can't stay vacant?
Yeah, I've definitely talked to government officials in some communities who recognize that and are actively working or have worked to change their zoning codes and do different things in order to accommodate that development. And the people I talk to, I mean, I think that's, they would argue that that's the way to go about it so that they, as a municipality, can better control, you know, the development that they see in their communities, as opposed to not doing anything with their various codes. And then a developer comes in that owns a piece of property and wants mm-hmm. to do something. And then you run into the case where you have to fight it out in court. So I think that you'll see that more and more where communities are going to recognize, like, look, this growth is happening. This is coming. Like, you know, we're getting developers knocking on our doors to, you know, do these projects. So we need to proactively update our zoning codes and do things like that in order to have, you know, plans in place, concrete plans in place that they could go to these developers and say, look, this is what it's zoned for. You know, this is what we want, things like that, so that they're not, you know, trying to play catch up after the fact.
And just finally, is there, in doing this reporting on all of these different developments, the different lawsuits that are all at different stages in the courts, did anything surprise you the most whenever you were talking to someone?
Yeah, I think just what really surprised me was just the number of these cases that you see pop up. You know, some of the real estate attorneys I talked to who have been around for decades said, you know, you used to see it here and there, but now you're seeing it like a lot more, and you're seeing it all over. It's not like you're just seeing these in certain areas. You know, in my story, I've cited, you know, Dublin, Hilliard, Worthington, Genoa Township. There's another one in Berlin Township that I'm working on. So you're really seeing it all over, and you're seeing it more than you have in the past. So, and I think that, unfortunately, you probably continue to see it as we continue to grow here in the region.
Yeah. And we have, in the suburbs is, you know, in the outskirts of 270, that's where all of these developments are happening. Whenever you think of Intel or like, Facebook or Google, you know, all Meta, they're all building these big centers that that need employees, and all those people need a place to live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you're going to see, you know, what was once, you know, stretches of farmland, hundreds of acres are going to be, you know, single family homes or apartments or what have you, because, you know, people that are filling those jobs, like you said, need places to live and ideally want to live pretty close to where they work. So, yeah, it's an interesting time out in the suburbs, like I have to say.
Well, thank you so much. That was John Bush, staff reporter for Columbus Business First. John, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And coming up, we're going to talk about more developments happening in the city of Columbus. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jarovich. We're talking about news surrounding some of the latest commercial and residential developments taking place in the region. And now we're going to focus on Columbus. From city zoning changes to hospital expansions, there's a lot of construction cranes dotting the landscape around the city. Joining us now is Brent Warren, Columbus Underground reporter, who has been covering the latest developments downtown. Welcome to All Sides, Brent.
Thanks for having me.
So I wanted to begin with something that is no longer there. Last month, the building that housed the Spaghetti Warehouse restaurant for more than 40 years was torn down. Can you remind us what happened? Why did that need to be torn down?
Yeah, it got torn down, like you said, about a month ago. The developers, there's a team of developers who own that site now, and they're looking at putting apartments there. And they went through a whole process with the Downtown Commission to get approval to demolish it. And their argument was that there were safety concerns, that the damage that had occurred at the building was sort of past the point of no return, and it no longer made sense for them to put money into fixing it up. They wanted to just tear the whole thing down. And that's the thing. I don't know how much you want to get into it, but the Downtown Commission has grappled with that a lot in when they're reviewing proposals, you know,
whether to save an old building or if it's worth it to fix it
and
up.
Even just whether to allow a demolition, because their guidelines state that they're supposed to only allow a building to come down when they have a fully realized plan to replace it in place, and they vote on that plan at the same meeting. And over the years, this has come up a lot because there's been a lot of proposals to tear down buildings in downtown Columbus.
So that's to avoid vacant lots. Is that what you mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if you've been downtown, you see there's a lot of surface parking. Yeah. We've lost a lot of buildings over the years. And this policy was put in place to kind of ensure that anytime a building comes down, there's a plan in place to replace it. Mm-hmm. And the exceptions are made when there's sort of a safety issue. So the developer argued that Spaghetti Warehouse building was unsafe even for people to be in, because you know, there had been a partial roof collapse in 2022, I think. Mm-hmm. And you know, rain had gotten into the building, it had gotten worse and worse. So that's what kind of convinced the commission to say, well, we trust that you're going to do you're going to put something on this lot and you don't have everything together to sort of get approval for that yet, but it's okay to go ahead and tear it down because there's some safety concerns with it letting it stand.
And so you said what's planned for there is residential, is that right?
Yeah, I think as of
but
now...
But it's not a fully developed plan?
No, they haven't shown any sort of like architectural drawings yet. They have kind of like some boxes that they show. I think they're saying 2 6-story buildings, so a little over 200 apartment units on that footprint where the Spaghetti Warehouse used to be. So that's what they're planning now. Originally, I think they had said like a much bigger building, like 15 stories, but they downsized that, they said, because of like economic concerns.
So when you say economic concerns, I guess that made me perk up because you're thinking like problems with the tariffs. They're worried about getting materials.
Well, this predated that. I mean, this is last year they were saying. So there was all these conditions that they were talking about at that time, which was like interest rates and inflation and cost of labor, cost of materials. And that stuff goes back to like the pandemic. You know, the materials issue has been around for a while. But now, I mean, I just wrote a story about this week. Like the first couple months of the Trump administration has added in, you know, kind of another layer of uncertainty with these tariffs. So absolutely, I think you're seeing even more hesitancy from developers because of that.
So uncertainty aside, there were concerns about saving one particular part of the Spaghetti Warehouse, the trolley in the building. What ended up happening with the trolley?
Well, good news on that front, because it looked for a while, they were saying in kind of these earlier meetings, they were saying they didn't know if they would be able to even get it out of the building without damaging it. You know, because when they originally put it in the building in the 70s, they had to punch a hole in the wall to get it in there.
Sounds stable. Okay.
Right. So they were worried about punching more holes and, you know, everything coming down. But the good news is they were able to get it out of there. And there's a local nonprofit called the Rickenbacker Woods Foundation that has a plan for the trolley. They've actually removed the trolley from the site and they have it in storage and they want to fix it up and use it, put it on their campus on Livingston Avenue and use it as sort of an educational, as a thing that students can go to and kind of use it to further their mission.
All right. So the trolley will live on
eventually. Yes. And actually if people are interested, I think they have a GoFundMe up to kind of fund that renovation process. Mm-hmm. So they can check that out.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about development in Columbus with Brent Warren, Columbus Underground reporter who's been covering development downtown. And later in the hour, we'll talk about zoning changes and other development related buildings. But I wanted to pivot for a few minutes to another type of development, which is transportation. It's a very important part of city life. So while we were talking about a trolley at the Spaghetti Warehouse, we don't have trolleys anymore, but we do have a lot of ride sharing, a lot of scooters, bikes. One of those bike sharing services, Kogo, ended last month. The city had been with Kogo for many years. Why did the city decide to make a change?
Yeah, Kogo has been around since 2013. So it really has. It was the first of these. I mean, the scooters have come more recently.
Yeah.
But we've had bike share in Columbus for a
long time. It
feels
like the scooters have been here forever.
Yeah,
anyway.
It hasn't been that long, actually. But
okay,
yeah.
So why get rid of Kogo, though?
Well, the city says there's a couple of factors involved. They've always had this relationship with Kogo, and the company behind Kogo has changed through the years. Most recently, it was Lyft, the rideshare company that ran Kogo and operated it. But the last couple of years, the city has been forced to subsidize the whole operation. And they've been doing that at the same time that they have a separate sort of permit system for the scooter companies. So they have this system where there's like 3 different scooter companies and those companies pay a flat fee depending on how many scooters they put on the street to the city. And those, I did some work kind of tracking the numbers on the scooters. And I mean, it's actually kind of crazy how many scooter, like in 2023, I think it was like 1 million scooter rides taken in Columbus over that course of that year. And
that seems like a lot. Is that a lot?
It is a lot,
yeah,
yes.
Okay.
I mean, for something that didn't exist as a transportation option, like, you know, 6 years ago, it seems like a lot, yeah. And compared to Kogo, where Kogo had been growing its ridership, it had a record year in 2023, but that's like in the, I don't know, 60 to 70,000 rides. So what happened is I think the city thought if they group all this stuff together, they won't have to subsidize the ride share. It can all be part of one administrative program, and also that they can actually get a cut of the revenue. So they put all that stuff into the contract. And now they have a new company coming in called Veo that starts the 15th, I think, of this month. So just in a few days, we're going to start to see another brand of what they call micro-mobility vehicles on the streets in Columbus.
So are all of the other scooters going away? The white one, the green one, the orange one.
Yes. Yeah, well, two of the three are going away. So Lime will no longer be here, and Bird will no longer have scooters. But the third one, this is another twist to the story. The third company that had been operating scooters in Columbus, they sued the city of Columbus at the end of last year, and they said that basically the process the city set up to pick the new vendor, which they picked Veo, Spin claimed that that wasn't a fair process and they should have picked them instead. And the result of that was what they call a negotiated settlement agreement. So the city and Spin agreed that Spin is going to stick around for the next year at least also. So we're going to have, starting March 15th, we'll have the Veo. And actually, Veo has a big... They don't just have the stand-up scooters. They have what they call like sit-down scooters.
They have a fleet, yes.
They have a fleet, yes. And they have the bikes and they have e-bikes. But we're also going to continue to have Spin scooters and Spin bikes also. So that's where we stand now.
So the Veo fleet, I was looking at a picture. So they have like two different types of bikes, some big bikes, like, and then they have like small little mini bikes. Mm-hmm. And that might be like the sit-down scooter situation.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. So there was at least... seven different mm-hmm. types. So we're going to see all these different modes of transportation.
Yeah, that's the plan. And I think the city has a court. What they told me is that in the contract there are some stipulations that it can't be all scooters. So it has to be, I think, half, you know, like what they call sit down options.
Okay. So the thing with Kogo is for Kogo to work, you had to park your bike in a set fixed station. So you had to end your journey at a place where you could park the bike, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is Veo like that with the bikes, or can you leave them anywhere?
I think there's going to be a little more flexibility. And even with Kogo, I believe with the e-bikes for Kogo, you could leave those different places. But it is going to be different now. The Veo, they're going to have like corrals where the Kogo stations are now. Mm-hmm. Those are going to be taken up. But the Veo stations, they don't have like it's not a locking element like you see with Kogo. So you'll just be able to leave them. It's a little quicker, I think, and a little more efficient. And I'm not sure of the exact rules about where you can leave them, but the city says they have all these rules in place so that the sidewalks don't get too cluttered. That's one of their big concerns with the scooters. I know that's something that people complain about.
Yeah, well, as an employee who works at Ohio State University, I definitely see scooters in various states of lying on the ground.
Yes,
everywhere.
I live in the university district, so I see the students love scooters.
Yes.
They ride them everywhere.
So Lyft or Lime and Bird are going away, but we'll still see the Spin ones.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then we'll have this whole new fleet that'll be added on. So
yeah. Yeah. Okay. It'll be interesting to see how it rolls out. I mean, the city is talking very positively about it now, but you know, we'll see. As we've seen with these scooters, it's a lot of change in a short amount of time, and there's a lot of moving parts with these things.
Did you look into, do other cities have single contracts with one company, or do other cities have different brands littered everywhere?
It seems like that's a direction that some other cities are moving in. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these sort of locking bike share operations like Kogo they've actually shut down in a lot of cities because it just hasn't kind of, the economic model hasn't worked out so well, except for like, you know, New York still has these and big cities, but it hasn't worked out everywhere. So you have seen this transition in other places. I know in terms of this company, Veo, they're operating currently in Toledo, and I haven't heard much about how it's going there, but that's the other place in Ohio where they already are.
All right. So so you said, you know, very soon we'll see these Veos, and then, you know, one other scooter brand will stick around. I wanted to talk a little bit about COTA, the Central Ohio Transit Authority. They're bringing back their late night bus service. What is happening there?
This is, I mean, just to kind of briefly the context here, CODA in 2019, they had like a 30-year record for their ridership. So they were doing pretty well at that time. And then the pandemic came and everything fell apart like it did across the country. But then CODA kind of recovering from that pandemic when, you know, they had to shut down lines, they had to drastically shorten the service hours. So it always used to be that the kind of what they call the last lineup for CODA was at midnight. That means you could always catch a bus. The last line would be leaving downtown at midnight. So a little bit past midnight, depending where you are in the city, you could rely on a bus being there. They cut that back, I think, to 10 p.m. right away during the pandemic. And at some point, they extended it back out to 11 p.m. But CODA has had a hard time adding back in all of their service since the pandemic, not just because of the pandemic influence, but they've had a hard time hiring enough operators to run the buses they need. So now they say they're able to do that. You know, some things have changed. They have a new union contract. They have a new CEO. And, you know, the Link Us funding.
Yeah, last November, voters approved the Link Us plan, which will provide more services because it is more money that they will be getting. And so that goes into effect soon. CODA will start seeing the money soon, and then they will start implementing the Link Us plan, which is multi-year.
So part of the Link Us plan is improving existing service. And part of that, they've always said, is bringing back the late night service, which now they're saying that's going to start in May. So we'll have the midnight buses running starting in May, which a lot of people are excited about. And beyond that, as part of the Link Us plans, they've said that some of the most popular lines in the system could go to 24-hour service. They've said that. Link Us also calls for, I think a lot of people have probably seen, the bus rapid transit corridors. So there's three of those currently kind of in design. And they've said that work, kind of the initial prep work for the West Broad bus rapid transit line will start this year. So those are moving forward.
I had Columbus City Council President Shannon Hardin on the show a few weeks back, and he was very excited about all of this, but it's going to take a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, this is like years away.
Yeah, it's not quick. All of these transportation projects, they have a very long timeline. So, but, you know, from CODA's perspective, I think they're excited that they have, you know, they're going to start collecting that sales tax April 1st, I think. So they're going to have another line of revenue coming in that can support their existing service. About 30% of that revenue also is planned to go toward things like new sidewalks and new bike infrastructure. So that's another element of the Link Us plan.
Not related to the Link Us plan, but there is, the city is getting the longest protected bike lane. So this is other transportation news. This is in Italian Village. Do you know about that?
Yeah. I wrote about that. This is part of the city. Last year, they did a new bike plan. They called it the Bike Plus plan. And they, in that plan, they outlined sort of a vision for adding lots of protected bike lanes, which that just means that the bike lanes are physically protected from vehicle traffic. It's not just a painted stripe on the
So this
the street.
Is like the white barriers you see. I'm thinking of like if you're traveling down Summit, right? Like,
yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. And on Summit, what they also do, they have those white barriers, and they also have a line of parked cars in between the traveling vehicles and the bike lane. And that's the plan for 4th Street. And it's actually, I think, all the way from Goodale to Hudson. So it goes into, you know, Old North Columbus area a little bit too. But they're going to switch the location of the parking lane and the bike lane. So there's a bike lane there now, which is just painted. And they're going to switch that bike lane with the parking lane. So there'll be more of a physical protection for cyclists going up 4th.
And has that started, or that's still just a plan?
That's a plan, but I'm pretty sure they have a timeline to get that started this year. It's part of, as part of that plan, the city, they have the big vision, but then they have like, I don't know, 10 or 15 projects that they have committed to starting within the next year or two. So that's within that bucket of projects.
So big changes coming.
Yeah.
Last year, a 2-mile bike and pedestrian loop known as the Capitol Line was also announced. And that is separate from this, right?
That's separate. Yep. The lead entity behind that one is Downtown Columbus Inc., which used to be the Columbus Downtown Development Corporation. And now they announced that last year. And the last I heard, they made a presentation to the Downtown Commission last month about all of the projects they're working on, and they said that work would start in that one too. The same thing, kind of the initial underground work is scheduled to start this year, later the second half of this year on that project, and that's the Gay Street section is the one they're doing first.
I don't even know if you know this, but it ties back into our scooter conversation. Are you allowed to ride scooters in the bike lane, or is it just bikes?
Yeah, you're allowed to ride scooters, and you actually see lots of people riding scooters in the
bike lane. I see them,
yeah.
But I never know what's allowed and what's not.
Allowed, yeah.
I mean, you're not supposed to ride them on the sidewalk,
right.
But you see that too, right?
All
right, well, coming up, we're going to talk about more development happening around Columbus. We will get into Zone In as well with Brent Warren, reporter for the Columbus Underground. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. A First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jarovich. From transportation to zoning changes to hospital expansions, we're talking about development changes happening in and around Columbus this hour. Still with us is Brent Warren, reporter for Columbus Underground. Thanks again for being here.
Thank you.
So recently, the Columbus City Council voted on zoning changes applying to land along the 161 and East Dublin-Granville Road corridor. Can you tell us about what they hope to do on this area if it's approved?
Sure. This was last summer. The city did kind of the big first phase of what they call the Zone In zoning changes.
Yeah, I mentioned Zone In a few times. So Zone In is the city's efforts to make zoning regulations easier in certain corridors.
Yeah, basically. And that first phase focused on major corridors, you know, so like Cleveland Avenue, Broad Street, High Street. And it put in this kind of a little more simplified version of what we have developed over, like, you know, eight decades or whatever, that was a little bit convoluted. So generally, it allows more development with fewer restrictions. And this 161 piece of that is kind of adding 161 into the fold of that first phase. So it's going to, what you have now on 161, I'm sure most people have a picture of it in their heads. It's a lot of retail, it's a lot of strip malls, and it's a lot of parking lots. And the new zoning code says it's, you know, it allows not just retail, but mixed use developments to be built. And it takes away some of the old restrictions that was in the old zoning, like parking minimums and things like that. So the hope is it's going to be able to create or encourage developers to build sort of more walkable development and kind of a bigger range of development than what we've ever seen on that corridor before.
The need for affordable housing is becoming even more important as the population of Central Ohio keeps growing. But when it comes to development, there are concerns that the city of Columbus, especially with this zoning changes, they seem to be favoring developers over the concerns of residents. So as a reporter, I mean, you cover urban development. Do you think that developers are getting the better deal here?
Oh, yeah. That's a great question. It's kind of a big
question. Yeah.
I think there's a couple of different ways I like to look at it, and just over the years of reporting on this. On the one hand, you definitely have one of the biggest groups of political contributors in Columbus is developers. So there's no doubt that they have a lot of influence when you measure it that way. On the other hand, I kind of feel like people see all of the new construction on Columbus and they think, oh, that's because Columbus is so developer friendly. But I mean, I think there are other bigger reasons, which is Columbus is a consistently growing metropolitan area. It has a kind of well-rounded economic mix. It has it's adding jobs. Developers love that. And that's the main thing driving that development. So you think, like, is Columbus more developer friendly than other places? It's hard. I mean, I'm not an expert on what other places are doing, but mm-hmm. everyone gives the example of like Houston, Texas. Like they have never had a zoning code at all.
Oh.
So that is a place where it's really easy to build housing, and they've actually built a ton of housing. So you look at Columbus compared to a place like Houston, which, yeah, that's definitely a developer-friendly city, but it's also one of the cheapest big cities in the country to live in terms of housing mm-hmm. because they've built so much of it.
Because they have more of it, yeah.
Right. So you can look at the issue a few different ways. A lot of people would say, you know, Columbus elected officials, developers, but also like affordable housing people would say Columbus has not built enough housing to keep up with need, with the demand, and that's why we're seeing prices go up on rents and to buy housing. And so we haven't built enough. So I don't know, are we too friendly, not friendly enough? That kind of depends on who you ask.
Depends on how you look at it.
Yeah.
The Columbus City Council president I mentioned was on the show, and he said, everyone talks jobs, jobs, jobs. We're getting more jobs, but a job needs somewhere to sleep at night.
That's right.
Right? Because yeah. a job is a person, right?
Yep.
And so that's the piece that is being forgotten, and you can't build houses fast enough. If you add a company that adds 18,000 jobs, you can't suddenly build 18,000 houses.
Yeah. Just like we're talking about these transportation projects, these development projects, even like a kind of a mid-size five-story building, the kind that you're seeing going up all over the place, the construction timeline on those is, you know, like 2 years.
Yeah.
So, and that's not even counting the pre-development where you have to get approvals and financing and all of that. So it takes a long time.
Yeah. And one of the projects last month, the Downtown Commission approved a 6-story apartment building at the corner of Gay Street and Grant. And it's planned to be affordable housing. So in this case of this project, how is the city defining affordable? Do you know?
Well, it's pretty complicated. In this case, this is a project. It's called Artemont Gay. It's being developed by the Finance Fund, which is a nonprofit developer, and it is about as affordable as a new development project can be in Columbus. Mm-hmm. It's, I think they put it at the 30 to 60% AMI, which that's the metric they use. That means area median income.
Okay.
So just to forgive me for, getting into the weeds a little bit, but this is like 100% AMI in Columbus right now. It's defined by HUD is for a 2-person household is $82,000. That's the income limit.
Okay.
So that translates to like, I think around a $2,000 a month rent, which doesn't seem affordable to a lot of people, obviously.
No, I'm shaking my head,
But if you get into the lower levels like this Gay Street project, which is using low-income housing tax credits to help finance it, that he said, actually at the meeting, the developers said that would probably have rents in the starting in the $500 range. So that is pretty affordable for downtown Columbus, you know.
Okay. So $500 for downtown.
Yeah. But he even talked about it at the meeting. He's like, this is a very tight project, he said. They do not have any wiggle room. And the commission had been asking for like maybe a mural on the side of the building to make it look a little nicer. And he's like, We can't afford that.
Will you pay for it?
He's
saying, will you pay for it? Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. In our first segment, we talked about cities in the suburbs and different townships denying certain development permits and refusing to rezone some areas. Developers are filing lawsuits over that around the suburban cities. Is Columbus with Zone In just trying to be more open to developers? Was that the goal to avoid lawsuits as well?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. That's also, I mean, I think Columbus for a number of years has been saying that we need to build more housing, and mm-hmm. they've been more open to that than some of the suburbs, although some of the suburbs have undergone similar kind of processes where they've, like Reynoldsburg and Whitehall have also been kind of redoing their zoning codes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Columbus has said for years they want to get ahead of this, and they want to make it easier for new housing to go kind of on these big sites on the major corridors throughout the city.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about development in Columbus with Brent Warren, reporter for Columbus Underground. I wanted to talk about hospital expansions. There's a lot of them happening. The first phase of an expansion for OhioHealth Grant's Family Medicine Center located downtown has been completed. So this is an actual project that's finished. Can you tell us about that new building downtown?
Yeah, well, that, I mean, they built that very fast. That was like an 18-month. It was impressive to go by it and see how quickly they built it. But that's like, it's a basically a medical office building and a parking garage next to it. And it's going into a spot that was just a surface parking lot before, but it's part of a bigger expansion that they're doing at Grant. And it's sort of like it's a Tetris problem. They're moving around pieces, you know. So the next phase of that project, they're going to demolish the old parking garage on Town, I think, and put in a 7-story building where that garage is now. And that's going to be attached to the existing hospital, and that's going to give more space for a new emergency room, trauma center, that kind of thing.
It sounds like Ohio Health, I think I read in your article that Ohio Health and Grant are very committed to downtown.
Right? Yeah, yeah, that's their message. I mean, they're not leaving downtown, they're investing more in it. So, yeah.
So there's cranes everywhere. Every hospital is building giant, tall buildings. Is this just meeting demand where it is? Have you looked into all of these hospitals built, you know, all of this hospital building as well? Because we need more houses, but
right.
Then we're also building more. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not Ohio Health has this. They also have Riverside where there's a big tower going up.
Yeah.
Ohio State obviously is building a huge new hospital.
It's amazing how big of a tower you can fit on a small piece of land,
It's incredible.
If you drive past where Riverside is putting it, it was a piece of a parking lot.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, the healthcare industry is a pretty complex thing. So I'm not going to pretend to understand exactly the ins and outs, but I know that there have been a lot of reporting about in the more rural parts of Ohio, they're losing hospitals.
Right.
So, I mean, for me, it's been a pretty clear trend line that if you live outside of a major city in Ohio, now you're going to have to drive farther to get to a hospital because all of the expansion space is coming in places like Columbus, and it's not coming in the farther out cities and towns.
They're building where all the people are.
Yeah.
Before we run out of time, I wanted to talk about Columbus State Community College as well, because they recently received approval for an expansion. They're building a health building. Can you tell us about the area of downtown where this is going?
Well, it's going on one of their surface parking lots. So they have been talking for years about filling some of those in because it's acres and acres of parking that they have on their campus. And they did a couple years ago, they did the Mitchell building, which is where their culinary program is housed. Mm-hmm. And that was a new building they built on Cleveland. And then this one will go south of that on Cleveland where there's a parking lot. It's a 3-story health sciences building. And they've also, they had plans that they announced, I think, last year to build housing with Woda Cooper, which is an affordable housing developer in Columbus. So that would also be around that Cleveland-Spring intersection.
Is that the building that they're building for Columbus State students to live in?
Yeah,
right?
I think they've said that at least a percentage of those units will be set aside for Columbus State students. Yeah.
And I think I read in your article there'll still be plenty of parking because
there's
so much, right?
And actually, they at the downtown commission meeting last month, they talked about that they still have plans for some of those bigger lots to do what they call kind of a mixed-use development, so something that would have maybe retail on the bottom or class space, I don't know, probably more likely retail with apartments above.
Mm. All right, well, we have about 2 minutes left. So what in your work, you've been studying, you've been reporting on development for years and years for Columbus Underground. What are you looking forward to next? How do you keep up with it all? Like what are some stories that you have in the pipeline?
Well, downtown, there's a couple of actually very big projects that recently got awarded state tax credits. It's called the Transformational Mixed Use Development Program, TMUD, they call it.
TMUD,
yes.
Okay.
One of those is called the Estrella, and it's a 24-story tower. The other one would put about 10-story tall buildings on a bunch of those parking lots across from the state house. So those are two big projects. We'll see.
This is building new towers.
New towers.
Not renovating, because we didn't even talk about renovating of the old ones.
Oh, yeah. That's another trend to watch.
Yeah.
Office to residential conversion. There's some of those happening also.
Okay. So in the 30 seconds we have left, across from the state house, there's a parking lot. And what's happening there?
There's several parking lots. And Edwards Companies wants to build four or five 10-story buildings to fill that in with apartments and retail.
apartments and retail, not office space.
I don't think they're calling for much office. Nobody's building very much office right now.
Okay. Well, there's all the, you know, the governor has moved for people to come back into the office.
True.
And so if you give up all the office space, then...
Well, I think they would say there's plenty of empty office space downtown right now.
All right. Well, we'll see, you know, offices, housing, lots to keep on top of. That was Brent Warren, who covers urban development for Columbus Underground. Brent, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us for All Sides. I want to say thank you to the All Sides staff, senior producer Marcus Charleston, producer Aaron Esmont Rabinowitz, and our student producers, Chris Corcoran, David Stein, Iza Huck, and Colin Simpson. Video production is from the Ohio Channel, and board operation is by Chris Johnston and Cameron Howard. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.